Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you are listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to see you guys tonight. Hey, we got a heck of a show. Shoot, sorry, I had to do a hard cut.
Yeah.
My bad. But hey, it's a great show on tonight. First of all, John Acuff is on, and I'm going to introduce you to John here in just a few seconds. And I'm really excited for this interview. John actually has and so we'll get to talk to John in just a second. We have some, Boova's got some Pope-style advice. If you remember, the premise is somebody at the bar lied and said that Boova was the Pope, and so now there's 30,000 people on his lawn, and he's got to give them some sort of, you know, pontiff-type advice before they leave his yard. And so Boova's got some of that. We got some secular versus Solomon. We give you a proverb. You got to tell me whether it's a secular proverb or something from the Bible. And basically, do we know biblical wisdom, or, you know, are we just taking whatever shows up on the Twitter as something from the Lord?
Or from the bar Pope.
Could be the bar Pope. Dan's got some What's Trending with Dan. We'll see what's going on in the world. It seems like it might be a little shifty. Dan, can you give us a quick preview of the stories?
Yeah, absolutely. There's authorities confiscated $3 million worth of Nike shoes from a Kentucky home.
Okay.
We got Bruce Willis's daughter walking around half naked in New York.
For the week, man.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. First of all, you can't see me because I donated my camera to John Acuff because he's worth it. John is a blogger. He's a highly successful author. And he has agreed to come on the show, probably against better judgments. This is John Acuff. Hi, John.
Hey, guys.
So, you know, first question, just with that introduction, we were kind of talking with the show, and the question is, what's on your business card? Or, like, if someone says, you know, hey, I'm Steve, hey, what do you do? How do you answer that question?
I'll show you one of my business cards.
Okay.
It's a miracle of technology. So this is my business card. It is large, and it's designed like a library card,
uh-huh.
And it is letterpress, so it feels, you know, impressive.
Yep.
It's got my books listed, so I don't really have a title. It says Acuff, John. I mean, it's like a light, like you'd see in the back of a book.
Oh, sweet.
So I've put it all together. I think the more awkward thing is when you meet people. This happened just the other day. Somebody said, well, what do you do? And I said, I'm a writer. They first think you're lying.
Right.
And you go, no, but like, what do you do for money? That's kind of what the state says. And then you go, and they go, what do you write? And you say, I write books, and there's still a lot of doubt and confusion, or that maybe I'm bringing that in my own insecurity. But I just say, I write books and I speak. And the speak part's the part people don't understand. I think they're like right now you speak, or you go places with belts on and speak. And it's the latter.
You know, I think their hesitation is who write books that live on a bench. Like, there's just that occupation does lend itself to wide extremes of society.
Yeah, I write books in the library, the public library, because it keeps you humble. Because you're surrounded by millions of other books that some author is like, the world needs this book. And it's ended up on a shelf where a man in sweatpants at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday is thumbing through it. You're right. There is a wide swath of people that say, I write books. And it's wider now because of self-publishing.
Oh, yeah. So are any of your works self-published, or did you kind of from the get-go jump on a legitimate branding?
No, my first two books are self-published, and they are horrible. And I did them myself, and I just basically – self-published for me was copy and paste blog posts. 98% of everything I wrote was considered the best of. It's like when Rolling Stone magazine does, you know, the 200 best Beatles songs, and there's 400.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a, you know – 50% are on the best of list.
You know, I feel kind of slighted actually, because I think I paid money for one of them books. I don't recall which one it is right now.
No, you did not, sir, because you are not my mom. I know for a fact you do not own any of my self-published books.
Actually, she said that my son was a writer and I should pay for it. I was just doing what I was told.
Well, if she was selling them to you, then I don't know who that woman was, but she was most definitely not my mom.
Most of the story that I've just told there is not true.
Actually, I was going to be quite impressed with Acuff's guerrilla marketing. He sends out his mom with a bunch of books in his trunk. Hit the streets.
About moving units. units.
Blog called Stuff Christians Like. And it's interesting because from my perspective, like, you carry a lot of influence. There's a lot of people that that follow you on social media and stuff. And I guess one of the things I was wondering was, have you ever like felt the weight of that type of influence that you have with that many people kind of holding on to words that you send out there, even kind of passive things that you might throw out? Has the weight of that kind of ever hit you in an interesting way?
Yeah, it's funny you said the word interesting, because that's one of those words that can mean horrible or great.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever tell a buddy your idea and they go, huh, interesting, it means they either hate it or they like it. And usually it's the hate. But for me, no, I mean, I guess the weight of it's a weird thing, because I try not to look down. Like, I try to walk across it and just ridiculous stuff, because I never want to lose that idea of that it's just fun. And I, you know, you should never take yourself too seriously. And so, and I don't like when folks that get some influence just get drunk on it. I go through that every now and then. I needed like 3 followers on Twitter to become a jerk. I have a low jerk threshold. So I try to have fun with it. I try to remember it's the internet. I try to remember that most of this stuff is temporary. So I try not to define myself by it, and, you know, just have fun with it.
Actually, I was going to ask you a little bit, like, because with the sheer number of interactions on social media you have, like, every once in a while I'll read one and think there's got to be days when you're just not interested in doing that. So do you keep like 15 in the can, you know, that you can just throw out if the day's really not lending?
You sure haven't been tweeting a lot lately. And I wanted to say, well, I'm writing a book. Like, I can only do so many bear attacks jokes. And so, yeah, there's definitely days, you know, where I just – there's nothing funny for me to say. And it's not that I want to write emo poetry that sounds like The Cure. It's not that I want to write something sad instead. It's just, there's some days where you just don't have it. I try to schedule stuff out to the best that I can, but I like the live in the moment stuff. That's why I live tweet stuff like the Grammys, because it's fun. I like that challenge. So yeah, but there's definitely days, especially blogging. Blogging is fun for the first day you blog. Every day after that is hard. The first day, you're like, I got a blog, I registered, like, I already got business cards, and you're telling all your friends, and you're looking at Google Analytics and becoming a credible reading from, like, Guam. And then, like, day 3, you're like, man, every day I have to do content, and this is tiring. So, yeah, it comes and goes.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I was just, it has to be difficult, especially kind of with the type of stuff that you do. I mean, you could only see Hacksaw Jim Duggan at the airport, like, once every few months, you know, like, it just doesn't walk into your lap. And if there's got to be times where, you know, you feel like people have an expectation to be able to hear from you. And I don't know, you feel like you have to do something. And I don't know, that just seems like it might be difficult at times.
I think it is. And I think part of it's just taking breaks. And part of knowing that, like, there's never going to be a time where you tweet something that somebody doesn't misinterpret or not like. You know, I tweeted one time, I think I said something like, if I was a pig, I'd be so upset about how chicken renaissance, like, do you remember 10 years ago we went through the mullet renaissance where, like, everything was a mullet joke and there was, like, websites devoted to it and they had, like, flash intros and it was like, mullets, you never hear about mullets now. They're kind of on the downside. So I said that about bacon and somebody was like, well, I thought only sinners should fear death. And they, like, turn into this deep theology. And I was like, are you talking about Christian pigs, like a heathen pigs? And so I try to remember that you can't write or create something not to offend or not to bother somebody, because, you know, and satire is like that. If you try to explain satire to somebody, you murder it. So there's times when I'll write something knowing some people aren't just going to get this. And I'll do, you know, rap references, or I think Tomorrow's Post mentions Bobby Brown's song,
yep.
Not in That Generation. And that's okay. Like, I'll do a Z Cavaricci reference, you know, or I'll mention Flight of the Conchords and, you know, or that Cinderella runs Disney like Jay-Z runs New York. And I'll say that in a speech, and I'll know that there will be people that come up to me and go, I had no, like, what did that mean?
Yep.
And so you try to, again, I try to have fun with it. And my wife keeps me sane and nice. I mean, the number of mean tweets she said, I don't think you should tweet that. I mean, I don't know if that's in Proverbs 31, but it should be.
Yeah, no, that's a good woman.
Actually, you know, I was going to ask you about that too, because we talk about that on the show quite a bit. Like, it's there's a lot of information that you can get out there, especially for, you know, information on how to live your Christian life or practical things or whatever. And like, it seems like the cesspool of the worst of Christianity shows up in the comments section. Hard to stay out of the comment section of your own blog. Like, yours is kind of actually tame. I look for it to see if there's fights brewing every once in a while, and I don't generally run into them. But it seems like you did an article for CNN a little while back, and the article was fantastic, and then the cesspool began inside the comment section. And
those are rough. Those comments were. I try not to get into those. That's an interesting idea in general, like the shift in our culture. Like 50 years ago, musicians, like thousands of people weren't commenting every day about the thing they were doing. Same with authors. I had a friend say, hey, you want to know what Kurt Vonnegut told me? And I thought that was a dope way to start a sentence. Yes. He said, well, Kurt Vonnegut said, you know, Mark Twain would have killed himself if he had Amazon reviews. You know, like the thing you create and can put 1-star reviews next to the buy button, like right up next to it. That's new. And so I try not to get too caught up in it, especially like CNN article or like YouTube comments. I never look at YouTube comments. Oh, yeah. That's like the first rule of the internet. And I never try to change people's minds if they're, you know, the times somebody called me a name the other day in a Facebook message about something, and ironically enough, they were saying that I had been mean to somebody else, and they felt like calling me the name was the best way to be nice to me, I guess. And so I responded, and not mean, and kind of responded, and they never responded back. So 99% of the time, when I waste my time trying to go, oh, let's have dialogue, they don't want dialogue. Yeah. They just wanted to throw a rock. And the other thing is, the internet makes people out of a book or some other, you know, big Christian. It's because people can get really mad because it's easy to hate somebody that you don't really know. They've never met Rob Bell. They've never had a coffee with him. They, you know, they're not his neighbor. He's just an idea. He's, you know, he's got, you know, his whole name is in bold letters to them. And so they can throw rocks. And so the internet's been weird to change that.
Actually, you know what? I run into that quite a bit, and it's actually a realization I think, that I've been through myself here recently, is like, especially when it comes to, you know, the differences in denominations and ideas on things and all that kind of jazz, is like everybody has some point in their theology that's just, it's not right. And you don't know what it is, but we can't all be right. And we can, you know what I'm saying? There's got to be some point in your theology right now, it doesn't matter what it is, that it's not jiving. It's not correct. You just don't know what that is. And so like, and like, I think you're right. If you put it in perspective of, he's a guy that have a coffee with him, see where he's coming from, or even just talk to him and treat him with some, you know, a little bit of respect and dialogue, maybe we wouldn't have such the cesspool in the comment area, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think the reality, to your point, none of us are going to get to heaven and God's going to go, you got it 100% right. Yeah. You figured me out. I'm mysterious and huge and massive and all creative, but you got it right. You batted 1,000%. You're the one. But sometimes we have that ego. And sometimes, I've written about this before, sometimes Christianity for some people is like a bully learning karate. Like they were already a jerk and now they're a jerk for Jesus. And that just, you know, all of a sudden they have a new way to beat you up. And so that's something that I try to be careful in conversations to that.
Has there ever been a conversation that you've started that you wish you hadn't?
Many, like a lot of them. I would say that like one that really sticks out to me is I did this idea, which was complete satire, about sometimes in music, people start in gospel and then they move up to country and then they move up to pop. Uh-huh. Like that's kind of the ladder. Like, so like Katy Hudson became Katy Perry, you know, and Jessica Simpson's first album was gospel and she moved up to pop and she was now down in, she had gone to country. And so I did this whole post about, are we ready to take her back to Christian? And I did this whole thing like, you know, this was when her sister was married to the bass player from when she come, you know, all this stuff. And people showed up out of nowhere to say some horrible things about her. And even though I hadn't said those things, I had created an environment where people could say that.
Yeah.
So for me, that was one of those shifting points where I felt like I realized there's two ways to do it. You can either seed the clouds for conversations, like meteorologists seed clouds for rain, or you can chum the waters for sharks. And there's enough shark Christian blogs out there that I don't want to be another one. You know, and the other thing I'd say is that there are some conversations that are too big for Twitter. Some conversations are too big for a blog post.
Right.
Some topics where I won't take the thing you care most passionately about and try to cram it into three sentences and think I've captured your whole story. I'd much rather talk to you about it face to face.
Right. There's things that belong.
Yeah.
So with the various things you got going on in life, how do you find balance in what you're doing? Because like a lot of the things that you're talking about, I think are very successful in motivating people to live more of the life that they're in. It's not it doesn't always call them out of what they're doing, but even to just be more a part of the life that they're in. How do you, with all the stuff you have going on, protect balance in your life?
Poorly. That's my whole answer. No, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm in a new season of life. You know, for the first time in 16 years, I don't have a boss.
Yeah.
I don't work at a company. So that's new. I'm only about 8 months into that experiment. And so I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do I find community when I don't go to an office? I've always had at least a workplace community. You know, we try to run a couple times a week and we're not going to win any marathons, but it's really about, I can't speak for other guys, but I suck at friendships.
Yeah.
Like it's not something I'm good at. It's not natural to me. And so I'm working hard to be, you know, this guy's friend and have him be my friend. And so that's part of that balance. And then it's this constant kind of reinvention of at least every few weeks sitting down with my wife and going, okay, am I traveling too much? And you know, where's something that's out of balance? I don't believe in perfect balance. I think that's a myth. The idea that you'll always have the same balance and it'll always be perfect. I think that I'll speak less during this season of my life because I've got young kids and I want to be around. And maybe when they graduate high school, my wife can come with me. I'll speak more then. So I'm trying to figure out the rhythm of each season.
Day. And it looks like you're involved with a little bit of you know, social media direction for companies. Like you're available to kind of help out in that area. Do you feel like the social media thing is going to saturate at some point and it's just going to be too much for everybody, or has it got some legs that can run for a little while?
No, I think it already is too much for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I, personally speaking, I'm not saying to myself, I hope another blog, you know, like writes 1,000 posts. I think I think we've reached some degree of social media saturation already, where you're seeing, you know, people aren't reading blogs the way they used to read blogs. You know, when I started Stuff Christians Like in 2008, Instagram didn't exist. Pinterest didn't exist. Twitter was barely around. And so those things have impacted the way people read blogs. There's a degree of social media exhaustion with some of it. Some of it's gotten even better. I mean, I'm able to do more video now, and I've got friends helping me do that. Private Facebook groups. I've got two groups, 30 Days of Hustle and one called Dreamers and Builders. And I've been blown away by the things the people that are in those groups have done. And so I think there's always going to be something new people are excited about. But I think that there are a lot of people that feel overwhelmed and feel exhausted. And they call it, like I've heard the phrase, profile exhaustion, where people don't want to sign up for one more thing. Like, okay, Plaxo. Now I have to be on Plaxo. Or like, here's my 27 LinkedIn following. You know, there's always a new platform. So I think it'll balance itself out, but I think that today is the smallest social media will ever be. I think it's only going to get bigger tomorrow.
Man, speaking of that video, Jazz, it looks like you were live streaming. What is the 6 Club, the 6 a.m. club there last week? How'd that go?
That was fun. We had about 75 folks, and it used to be the 5 Club, but we realized that to ask your friend in a church to open up the building at 4:30 a.m. is a good way to lose a friend. And so we bumped it back to the 6 Club. And I liked 5 Club as a name better because it sounded like Fight Club.
Yeah.
It kind of had a ring, and 6 Club does not sound like that.
No, it doesn't.
6 Club sounds like there might be muffins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, John.
Yeah, it's a different vibe, but yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it's 75 folks in Nashville that are all working on a dream, and if you can't get up half an hour early to figure out what you want to do, then you haven't figured out the.
I got to get up earlier for 15 years, and every time I'm like, well, no, maybe not today.
Here's the thing, I'm gonna tell you a quick story.
Your job requires you to get up early.
What's that?
Your job requires you to get up early.
No, not really. I don't have to be up early. I don't know. I always feel great if I get up early in the morning. Like, it feels like something's been accomplished. Actually, so I read something today. I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was that there was an army officer or whatever, give him advice. He said, make your bed. Make your bed. So you accomplish something right away. And I thought, yeah, I like to get up and accomplish something. Even eating breakfast. I skip a lot of breakfast. And I feel like eating breakfast is like a big accomplishment for me. And I've conquered the day so far because I've eaten something. But most of the days, I'm like, well, maybe breakfast can wait. There's another couple meals coming around. It's poisoning personality that I...
That sounded like there's going to be some Taco Bell extra meals thrown in there. After dinner meal.
You know what happens, though? It's like I don't really let breakfast go. I just shift it to like a 3:30, 4 o'clock stub meal, of which I can't prepare for, so I have to eat out. So like it's the double poison. I not only did not get up early and eat, but then I bought something I shouldn't have purchased with money I didn't have, and things that my body shouldn't use, all at 4 in the afternoon. And so I ruined dinner that my wonderful wife has prepared. It's rough. It's like cheating on the
it's
other
a
meals.
Rolling stone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's meal adultery.
It really is. That's a slippery slope.
Mike was telling us a story just before we actually got on the air with you about how you poisoned his phone.
Yeah, here's the deal. So I downloaded Quitter. Quitter came available on an audiobook, and it was free, and I thought, heck yeah, free Quitter. But I didn't playlist it. Like, I just kind of threw it in with the rest of my tunes. And so I listened through it, you know, while I was driving, because I drive a lot for work, and I really liked it. But it got cut in my shuffle. And so, like, I'd put on my headphones to go mow the lawn or something, and I'd be rocking out to, like, you know, Walk the Dinosaur. And then here comes Acuff, and he's like, Chapter 7.
I like what was your reference, Walk the Dinosaur.
That was the prequel. So anyway, like I'm rocking out, mowing the lawn, and then Acuff is like, Chapter 7, you can't quit your job. I'm like, whatever, Acuff, I'm mowing the lawn, you know?
And then, stay out of it, Acuff.
and it actually progressively got worse, you know? Like I'd go ahead and I'd skip past him, no offense, but I'd skip past him because I'm mowing the lawn, you know? And like 5 songs later, he come rolling back in with like, Chapter 8, You Don't Hustle. All right, you know? I tried to skip past, you know, the Quitter book, and like it just go to another chapter, and it was like it had taken over my phone, so I eventually had to take it off of there.
Well, I want to tonight live apologize for giving you a free product that I put my heart into.
Sorry, it cut into your lawn mowing. Hey,
Could your next question be how our generation is getting more entitled?
Hey, this story was about me, Echo.
That's true. He redirected
it. That's what you learn in the media. Media training. Redirect.
You get on Skype, suddenly you're a king. Hey, so what's going to be in the John Acuff store on your website that's yet to come?
That is a great question. Probably, I don't know, probably T-shirts. Definitely some digital stuff. I hear a lot of curriculum. So I'm not sure yet. My wife and I talked about that the other day, and she said, I feel like T-shirts are just an ego play. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I think you just want people walking around wearing something you've said. And I told her, I love you. Thank you for your wisdom. I said that eventually. First off, so people need soft, buttery soft T-shirts. There's not enough ways to get creative T-shirts on the internet. We need one more additional way. So I don't know what's going to be in there. Any suggestions? Were you about to pitch one?
Well, we were talking about it. We thought maybe some sunglasses with your face up in the right-hand corner, but you're right. I mean, that kind of falls under the same line like your wife was saying.
I'm thinking,
not above that.
I was thinking barbecue apron, but like, I mean...
Somebody made as a joke, what do you call it? Cufflinks with my head on them. And they were like, a cufflink. I'm like,
A lovely pun as an accessory.
If they bobble-headed as well, I'd probably buy one.
I don't have one. I have I could show you that I have a cardboard cutout that my kids have decorated. I'll move the camera and show you what that looks like. Let's see. Can you see it in the corner?
Hold on. Yeah, oh, yeah, there it is.
It's got Kick Me on the Face. and the Quitter shirt. So they are pretty impressed by me.
Wait, I mean, did they have that made, or did someone else make that of you and you just brought it home with you?
Zondervan made them. Yes, you forget they exist, and then you come home late at night, and there's a thin, terrifying man in the corner of a room that you forgot is made apart.
Help me, I'm being robbed by a handsome guy who looks just like me.
Who's 90% to scale.
Apparently he's been kicked. I don't know what happened.
But he dresses well.
I said to Zondervan, hey, thanks for making me shorter. If there was a direction you could have overcorrected on, height, go up.
That's true. Oh, you get to Photoshop your cardboard cutout with a, wait, make it a little beefier, you
did
know?
Did they ship those to you? Like, did it come in the UPS?
I think so. I mean, they come in a flat. They don't come put together. There's a technique.
That's slightly less awkward than putting them in your car.
I mean, that's, I don't know. I feel like that's more awkward to have to put yourself together as a cardboard cutout. Like, you're spending time.
Like, there's some meta-narrative there or something. People say that. So.
It's got to be a real surreal moment when you arrive in the mail.
Open up the package. It's me.
I'd say it's less surreal when your wife goes, are we going to keep all of these? Like, which one do you get? Which kid do you love the most? Am I right?
Shoot, I didn't catch it. Does it go down to your shoes? Is that, like, going to seriously date your style 3 years from now?
No, my style's pretty simple. So they're, like, white shoes. The jeans are baggier because I didn't live in Nashville when they made it.
Uh-huh.
You have to wear skinny jeans in the city. And then it's got a V-neck and no ring on the fingers. So apparently he's single. This is Bachelor John.
Wow. We'll see the edits. Thank you so much for joining us here on Live from the Path. And you can check, you can see John all the time by going to acuff.me. That's a king of Skype type of web address there, John. acuff.me, or you can go to Stuff Christians Like. Thanks again for hanging out with us, and we hope to talk to you again.
Well, thanks, guys. They were fun questions. They were unexpected. I felt like we brainstormed some good ideas for the store, and I was able to apologize for sliding one of the hosts with a gift.
Yeah, it wasn't real smooth, but I accept it.
Critiquing the apology. It wasn't the best apology I've heard, but I'll take it.
Thanks, John.
That was John. Thanks, John.
All right, thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye. Did we ask everything?
I don't know. I tell you what, here's the deal. We have the interview skills of like a two-legged lizard. You know what I'm saying? But the legs are on the opposite. They're on the diagonal.
Like, yeah, that's true.
We limp it along. It seems like it's going to be interesting because it's a two-legged lizard, but it has the opportunity to fall on its face at any time.
No, here's the deal. That guy makes anybody look good. That's you know true. What I'm saying? Like, yeah. he's a good interview on the other side. We could have been totally lame and partially were.
I like marshmallows. What do you think?
He rescued it.
What are your thoughts, John?
That's a skill. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Again, go check out John. Go to Stuff Christians Like or acuff.me. There's a lot of you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. There's a lot of humor in what he does. There's also a lot to get out of it. So you know, approach it with being ready to be entertained with some grace for the conversation.
I think Ben's right. Like the whole reason that I want to invite him on the show is because you know, our tagline is honest faith, fierce grace, and donkeys. And I feel like John does a very good job of representing an honest faith. You know what I'm saying? He presents a lot of humor and honesty, and even when it makes him look silly, you know, it's from a humble perspective, and I think he does a great job.
And that fierce grace actually, and I didn't get to tell this while he was on, but the fierce grace was actually from a blog post that he had. So when we first started the show, like, we have no skill or anything, and we don't know how to. It's internet radio, so anybody's put on there, and so we're like, we don't know what to talk about, and so we kind of just started looking at John Acuff articles, and this would have been 3 or 4 years ago. And say, okay, what's he talking about? Because obviously people are interested in that, and we'll just kind of talk about that.
Yeah.
And one of his blog posts was Fierce Grace, was kind of the context of this blog. And it was an excellent article. What we're actually pursuing in our conversation, are we representing, are we being gracious in our conversation in representing the grace of Christ in those discussions, even when we're having the honest discussions that frankly can rub up against some people's comfort level. So anyway, very, very cool. All right, Dan.
Yeah.
What's trending in the world?
All right. Let's start with a nice one. This is a pretty simple one. Authorities confiscate $3 million worth of shoes from a Kentucky home. Police are investigating after finding $3 million worth of missing shoes at a home. Like I said, officers with the Radcliffe, Kentucky Police Department confiscated thousands of pairs of Nike shoes. They were scattered in front of the home. The shoes were supposed to be shipped in 2009 from a Nike distribution center in Tennessee to another one in Texas, and they never made it. They were going to take them to a flea market.
Okay.
I mean, how do you have like a semi-truckload full of shoes?
Yeah, this all sounds legit.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, Who do you buy that from? And what makes you think they're... Anyway, here's the question.
That's one heck of a trench coat. You
hey, I've got some shoes.
Mr. Fantastic is just going, hey.
Here's the question. Is it ethical to buy or sell something that may have been stolen by someone else? I mean, they had to assume... They probably bought these cheap,
right.
And there were a lot of them. So, A, no, it's not ethical. Jesus whipped the money changers, and he'll whip us too. B, what's the big deal? I steal stuff from work all the time. Or C, why not? They already received the insurance money. It's a win-win for everybody.
These are some rough choices.
Yeah. I feel like all three encapsulate me on some level.
I know you.
But I have to answer A. Like, I gave up my favorite pastime of downloading illegal music off the internet based off that exact premise. I didn't know where they got it from or whether it was stolen. And frankly, I think I stole it. And
Jesus,
so,
I whip you.
Yeah, so it wasn't for the fear of the money changer rebuke. But I think I was a straight, I'm an A on that one.
Yeah. I'm a straight A. You got to err on the side of caution there.
I'm going to go A.
Likewise, A. But was that whip money changers? Is that what we're doing?
Well, I just had to make it sound sensational.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's got a motivation, you know. It's like,
Jesus made a whip. You won't believe what happens next.
Number 7 really changed my life.
You won't believe it. That's awesome. Well, I mean, I think that we steal things all the time, or people do. I shouldn't say we, but you know, you just take stuff and not think about it. Something from war
thief, like terrible, yeah. Terrible time thief.
Yeah, I mean that's someone's paying your salary to be there, and it's
of course they kind of figured it in that I wouldn't work. You know, as Acuff would put it, I wouldn't hustle the whole time I was there.
So you're like, it's the win-win thing?
Kind of. That's where I'm saying I may be slightly convicted with the C. Like, hey, they paid me anyway. They kind of figured it in. Productivity.
They know I'm no robot.
Like 30%. You know. So anyway, I was wrong about that. A.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the proper answer. Maybe not necessarily the motivation behind Jesus whipping, but you know, don't if it's stolen, right,
we gotta put Jesus in the show somewhere. We're just well,
gotta get some Jesus.
Sensationalist.
All right, here's another one. This one get a little risque here. Right, Bruce Willis's daughter protests social media by walking topless in public. All right, Scout Willis recently walked around the streets that he called instances of abuse. Uh-huh. And the abuse was she had posted a picture with a couple of friends who were topless, also a picture of herself that was in a very sheer top, so it must have been pretty see-through. In her protest, she walked around topless, pointing out that it's legal to walk around New York State, which I didn't understand that, topless, uh-huh. Never heard that. But it's not in social media, and she thought it was ridiculous. She claims back in the 1930s, men's bare chests were considered taboo, but society changed, and wonders why 80 years later women can't achieve the same for their chests. She says, why can't a mother proudly breastfeed her child in public without feeling sexualized? Why should I feel overly exposed because I choose not to wear a bra? And she concluded by saying that it should be a woman's right to choose how she represents her body.
I'm sorry, was she breastfeeding at the time?
No, she just over in our...
It is. That is, yep.
Generational difference for sure.
Yep.
On the younger's, how they look at that. Anyway, here's the question. Is there a difference between publicly exposing a man's chest and publicly exposing a woman's chest? She's really saying there's no difference.
Uh-huh. Okay.
A, of course not. We're all created in God's image and should be able to appreciate the beauty and innocence of the human body without thinking sexual thoughts.
Uh-huh.
B, absolutely. Men are pigs and cannot be trusted. No matter what the context, even if it's breastfeeding, men tend to be turned on sexually by sight. Or C, as long as you call it art or natural, you can do whatever you want and it doesn't matter.
There's a Dan plane. Dan plane is coming to the runway.
Boova, what are your thoughts?
Here's my mind on lady nudity. Sadly, I'm going to have to go with B. I think that men are, in general, men are pretty much pigs. Myself included in that sometimes, and I that's just me being real.
I'm a pig.
Yeah, I'm a total pig. I'm a joke. I know I am. And when this stuff comes to temptation and things that maybe it shouldn't affect people, and that's an absolute understandable point to take that it shouldn't, but it does. And that's the reality of it. And as long as it does, it needs to be stopped because of the fact that that's bringing on unnecessary temptation. I get that some ladies think that's unfair. I get some dudes think that's unfair. But when it comes down to it, if you've got that situation, most of those gals are going to be completely upset when the man does sexualize them. So I'm gonna go.
But I know zero exceptions to the B rule. We're all pigs.
B.
I mean, I'm going with B with the caveat that I actually would support public breastfeeding. So do whatever you want with that. Because it can be done without being out and about.
You can do it modestly.
Yes.
Yeah. There are some who are pretty not modest.
And a lot of times they're protesting something. But like, yeah. Like the people that I know that are strong advocates for that are they just want to be able to feed their kids. There's not an agenda to say, I also want a breeze.
And the last thing in their mind, the last thing in their mind is being sexual. I mean, that's just
I'm not saying. I mean,
they're not thinking that. But every guy is going. Hey,
an ankle in an Arab country will do the same thing. I mean, like, there's women can moving on.
Boy, I expected more from you guys. You're all a bunch of pigs. All right,
you are too.
I am.
There we go.
Persecuted church.
Okay.
This is a lot of different news, but the one heading right now that's kind of trending is the I'm trying to add an extra syllable in here. Sudanese, how you say that?
Okay, yep.
Sudanese. Yeah. Officials told the media that a 27-year-old woman imprisoned and sentenced to death for being a Christian, refusing to renounce her faith, would be set free in a number of days. They changed their mind, basically, since, like, yesterday. Her father, which she hasn't seen since for years, evidently was Islamic. She married a guy who was a Christian. The court decided it was not a real marriage, gave her 100 lashes. She's in jail, going to be a persecuted church from various countries, various places. It's been going on since Stephen and Acts, so it's not like new. Isn't,
yep.
You know, it's been going on. So here's my question: what is the most appropriate way for Christ followers in America to respond to the growing persecution of our brothers and sisters overseas? A. Pray for them to be strong, faithful, and have peace through the persecution. B. Create a hashtag campaign that tells everyone's calls everyone's attention to their pain. C, pressure our government to get militarily involved in protecting innocent people. And I threw in a bonus, D, there's nothing we can do, let's not talk about it, and hope it'll never come here.
Ben, what's your go?
I think it's straight up pray. I'm not sure our government inserting themselves into that is necessarily a will of God item. I think you pray for them.
Yeah, I'm going to go with A as well. Obviously, we're called to expect this. Jesus called us and told us that this is going to happen. No one should be surprised by this. Obviously, from a human perspective, we are, and we don't want to see it. But at the same point in time, from a biblical perspective, we are called to expect it.
Dave Herrick, you've spent time outside of this country.
Yeah, I'm inclined towards go join them.
That's actually what I was actually thinking.
I mean, pray, certainly, but yeah.
Also go join them. Be persecuted as well, like jump in jail with them. Is that what you're saying?
Remember them in chains as though in chains with them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, unpack that. What do you mean? What does it look like to me?
It means getting to know their story. It means not just sending up a quick prayer and then going on and eating your happy meal. Their story. Meet with their family. Meet with the people who are involved in the situation, the decision makers. I mean, in this case, I know more to this story than I can really say at this point. But,
Man.
So. Sorry.
Well, I feel like he knows more than I know. it's actually stories like these where I get, convicted of my American existence, I should say. I don't know that it's ever, that I've ever let it come to fruition. You know what I'm saying? I don't know that I've ever let that truth sit on me and actually bear something out apart from the prayer, you know? But I'd like to think that that's a work that God is changing in me. You know, like there has to be a meal and going, you know, I prayed. I feel like it's in the Lord's hands. You know what I'm saying? I'm good. Now granted, I don't think you should go hauling over there warrior style without the Holy Spirit's blessing. But like, I don't know. I guess when you pray about that, I guess I leave that door open as wide as possible and say, I'm up to whatever you want me up to. I don't know why you have this on my heart. I don't know why I'm praying for. There's so many things in the world that I should be praying for. I only hit the specific ones that I feel like the Holy Spirit has laid on my heart. So, I mean, the question goes, I don't know why you're laying this on my heart or what's going on, but, you know, if you got to hit me with something to help me realize what you got going, then I'm asking. Hit me.
Because it's hard to get to know the story. Like you say, you get to know their family. I mean, you know, here I am, sitting in Johnston, Iowa. I can't go to where those 30 children have been kidnapped. I can't go to where this woman is. I can't go to where this guy. I mean, I don't know their language. I don't know their culture. I don't know the circumstances. All we know is what we read in the media, which was manipulated in some way to say something. You know, and they don't necessarily know everything. They you know, the whole game. So it's, I think that is tough. But we are called to do something, I think. And
do you think we rely on that too much as maybe the a more modernized nation, where we're like, we do bank on prayer, which is obviously you know, not against biblical teaching at all, but like, do you think that's where our buck stops most of the time? Do you think that we think that our involvement is to pray for it in almost every situation and then be done?
I have a personal conviction to not pray for things that I'm not willing to get involved in.
I feel like that's a...
And the answer is no, and that'll really
that's
surprise
awkward.
People. But it's part of that conversation of, look, I've only got so much headspace, I've only got so much time and so many resources, and I'm not just going to throw up a quick and cheap prayer and hope that, you know, whatever. I'm only going to ask God to get involved in things that I myself would want to spend my time on.
Right.
I want to get involved in.
Dear Lord, can you send hands and feet that aren't mine to somewhere else to do your work?
Yeah, it seems hypocritical. And, I mean, I can't do that. So,
dang.
Boo, nope.
You ever run into that?
Well, that's an interesting conviction. only because for the last how many weeks, I've really been working on prayer. I realized I am very good at pharisaical prayer. I'm very good at it when it comes to standing in front of some people and praying for just crazy big stuff and really saying the right words and things like that. I'm awesome in my own eyes, obviously. But when it comes to just, you know, driving along and bowing my head in prayer, or just praising God every day, or just spending time with God in prayer and listening and things like that, I'm awful. And that's an interesting conviction to hear, because of the fact that one of the things I've been working on is whenever Facebook posts happen and then people ask for prayer, it's really easy to write the praying comment, right? Sometimes you open up and you see 30 comments and all of them are praying, and there's no punctuation because there's no time for periods. And just praying. And I find myself sometimes writing praying. That just kind of takes a sec, or it takes a different conviction portion for my prayer life. I've never heard it put, you know, I'm not going to praying on something if I'm not physically or mentally willing to get involved in it. And that's interesting to take. I would agree with the base statement of prayer is just kind of the first thing we can do. Obviously, it's an incredibly powerful thing. It's our way to speak with God, and it's our way to bring things to God in our own words and things like that. But action is a lot of the times the way that God answers your prayer. And I think we look past that because we think to ourselves, oh, well, that's obviously not what's going to happen, because that's me trying to get involved. That's not God. But sometimes that could be God saying, we're going to go do this now. You're going to do that now. Here's where you're going to get involved. And I found myself guilty of that. So it's just interesting to hear that thought.
Dan, your thoughts? That was your question.
I think that if we're going to like pray over a situation, it should be an earnest prayer. You know, I think that there are times you have maybe that little quick little prayer, and those aren't necessarily bad or evil. I mean, you can pray for certain people, but especially the bigger situations. I mean, these people's lives are on the line. I just don't feel right about just like, okay, God, real bless, and just bless those people. I mean, really pray, you know. I mean, and part of that might be trying to figure out, like David said, you know, getting into the story, but in what, feeling helpless at the same time, knowing, well, we have the God of the universe on our side. But then I struggle. Well, what do you pray for? You know, that's why I kind of worded things pretty carefully here. You know, for them to be peace, to have peace through this, to be strong through this. They're not asking for an out, generally.
No.
You know, if you're, again, it's only for me reading stories. They're not asking to be saved from persecution. They want to be strong in persecution. I think that's probably part of our hindrance in the church today, is we have no persecution. Other than, you know, oh, they told me at work to stop wearing Jesus shirts. I'm really being persecuted. It's like,
Right. They're okay. Coming after me.
Yeah, I don't really think.
You know, sometimes Ben and I talk about this a lot, but like some of this has to do with like Christians, they're asking for advice, you know, or they're having a tough time, and they're like, and I feel like the devil's really coming after me. And his legion of demons, like, they're a finite number of folks. You really got to be, I feel like that just if you're going to, you know, use your resources correctly, that you really got to be kicking some waves in his area for him to even come after you. You know what I'm saying? But like, they're like, yeah, you know, I went to go get a soda and the come and go was out of soda. And I just feel like the devil's just trying to beat me down. He's like, you know, listen, Fred, I mean.
Maybe
I
you're just making some poor choices.
Yeah, I feel like you're not at the front lines, maybe, like, thinking. You know, like, I was trying to get the kids scheduled for swimming lessons, and you know, they cut me down to 36 hours instead of 38, and I can't take much more of that. And I'm like, you know, I feel like you should pray on this thing and maybe try to get a different perspective on life, you know? But I think that happens. That's the mentality that I feel like. And I make fun of that, but like, see me. Why is mail not delivered on Sunday?
Well, I really feel like Job today.
You know, I feel like you're coming after me. You can see I'm down. I'm down. I'm not feeling right, you know? And I'm not saying that he's not there to like personally care about you and lift you up, but like, I mean, seriously, like, you're not kicking waves in the devil's direction. And he's like, I think Mike will destroy himself. I'll just leave him alone, you know? There's no reason to send a guy. I feel like he's on it, you know? And like, I think we have that opinion. A lot in our culture where, I mean, we don't know anything about persecution, and so we grab onto the closest thing, you know, which is they canceled As the World Turns, and we're having a rough time. You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Listen, we got a little bit of time left on the KTIA broadcast? Just a little bit.
Yeah, we just got a few minutes.
Okay, I feel like we're going to hit a Dear Life from the Path real quick, so get ready to participate in your vehicle. And I are young newlyweds and adjusting to our new life quite well. However, while we both come from deeply religious backgrounds, deeply religious families, we're both non-believers, which has caused some strife within the family.
Uh-huh.
Mike has several nieces and nephews, ages 4 to 9, who have asked us repeatedly why we don't go to church with them, since the whole family goes together. Their mother has made it clear that they do not want the children knowing there is another option besides Christianity, and I understand, since their faith is so important to them. But I don't want to lie to the kids or ignore their questions. Is there a tactful way to answer these questions without stepping on toes? Whip. Up first, Dave Herrick. Dave Herrick, here's the deal. There's some family members. They have kids, and they're asking questions about religion, and the parents are just a bit.
So non-believers or just one of the parents?
Both parents are believers. They take their kids to church religiously.
Okay.
And they're not interested in this couple. Who grew up in a religious background, but is not really feeling it right now, they're not interested in them telling their views to the children. The children ask why you don't go to church or what's going on, and they don't want to lie to the kids on why they don't go, but so they're asking for a tactful way to tell the truth.
I don't know what the issue would be. I mean, just tell the truth. You know,
So if you were put in that shoes, then you would say, like, you know, your daughter asked somebody why they don't attend church, and they're like, look, I just don't believe in God like you do. And sure. you say, look, my child can receive that. We can have easygoing lifestyle has made it very hard to start a conversation.
Sorry.
Your thoughts. I shouldn't let Herrick go first.
Yeah. So
if you say anything more than he did, you're going to seem bloated. I'm just saying. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm interested. Okay, I'm trying to think of how to look at this because I think I'm trying to give advice from the parents' perspective, not the couple. So the couple, I agree. I think they just need to be honest. I think that they can go very in-depth of why they don't believe in things like that, and that would be completely inappropriate. But just, I mean, even saying, well, we just don't believe the way that you and your parents believe, and that we just don't go to church because of that. I think that's not going to.
But parents don't want you to.
I get that. I don't think you're really. I don't think you're really saying anything.
4 to 9.
Yeah, I don't think you're opening a conversation of, well, I just don't believe the way you believe. Well, what does that mean? Well, I believe that there's no God in existence and blah blah blah. You're not really opening yourself to that kind of conversation. I don't think anyway. So I don't think by saying we just don't believe the way that you believe would be going against the parents too much.
Well, here's the deal. Like, I feel like my kids would not let it stop there. I feel like my kids would say, what do you mean?
Yeah. I would unleash my kids.
I feel like
make them explain themselves.
I feel like they'd have right at them. Here's the deal. Like Abu was right. We can't talk from the aspect of the parents. I actually think it's the church going Christian parents who are in the wrong here. I feel like if your faith is one that you're supposed to proclaim to the world, then you want to meet the people that don't know Jesus right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Bring them on. I'll stick the 6-year old on them. And actually,
she'll ask honest questions.
She
won't be all cloudy and
no, she'll be straightforward. She's a bold evangelist, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think I disagree with the parents, but from where they're coming, let's put it on another foot. Let's say that your family is non-religious, and they say, "Why do you go to church all the time?" And the parents don't want you explaining God to them. I do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we have
that.
Yeah. We have that with like friends and stuff. My kids are well, I have one a little younger than 9, but otherwise that age range is just about right. They know people that we are friends with that don't love Jesus.
Yeah,
you know, and they handle it how they handle it.
That's like, part of the conversation of them growing up is not everyone believes.
Yeah,
right.
We explain to our children very, very young, hey, there's a wide road and a narrow road, Jesus said. Not everybody's on our road, you know, mm-hmm. and not everybody's no longer in church that they've fallen away and say, okay, let's be honest. What's going on? Where did your faith get weak? You know, mm-hmm. where did you finally, when did you start to doubt? Is it a church thing? What is it really? Are you mad at God? You mad at people? Mm-hmm. You just have not found a good fit for a church? You don't have to go to our church. Go to another church, mm-hmm. you know. If that's they're trying to make it a family church thing, maybe they grew up and said, "Yeah, this isn't really for me." Well, then find a different one, but don't give up your faith. You know, let's find out what happened. I'm going to find out their issue so we can help them because we want them to go to heaven.
Okay,
which doesn't answer their question.
Thanks, Dan. Secular says, secular says you could never respond by saying, or you could respond by saying, "Your uncle and I have other plans." And if the kids ask what they are, tell them what you plan to do that day. If they ask why you don't come to church like they do, tell them go or not.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
Bad advice.
You're a child. You must learn about your religion.
We don't have a religion.
When you're adults, you may abandon it like we have done.
What kind of advice is that?
I could write my own column. Here's what I do. Yeah.
I could write my own column. That is saying a lot.
All you have to do is say something in response, and you have a column. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be good, solid, anything. You know, hey, here's what I want to do. Kettler.
Hey, man, here's Doug. A guy with a hat, and then he bought a duck once. That's what I'm going to tell you to do.
And that is the world. Continue along with secular's advice. While I respect your in-laws' desire to practice their faith, I think it's unrealistic to try to keep children in the dark because as soon as they hit school, unless they're homeschooled or in a church-run school, they're going to meet other kids who worship differently or not at all.
You've been listening to Live from the Path. Hey, we got to let you go if you're on 99.3 KTIA. Thanks a lot with the Eisenhower team. Make sure you check those guys out. Give them a big thanks for sponsoring the show. Buy a house from Bob. Have your dog fixed by Westfield. That's what goes on in those places. Big thanks to John Acuff for hanging out with us. You can find more clips online at lifefromthepath.org. And if you're on the podcast, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with you. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path. Sorry, I got a little distracted. We're having some broadcast problems.
We are?
Yeah, the YouTube. I had to cut the YouTube broadcast short.
What?
It wasn't playing nice.
Well, that's very disappointing.
There were at least 3 people that were mad.
I won't stand for this.
Oh, man. Then we got some Pope style with Booba.
Okay, one more Life from the Path, then Booba.
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm 20 years old. My boyfriend and I don't drink. Almost every person my age does, and it's starting to get to me. I love to have friends besides my boyfriend I can hang out with. But I find that I can only connect with him because everyone else is always wants to go out and party. He is an introvert, so the seclusion doesn't bother him. I, on the other hand, am greatly bothered by it. I've always been ahead of the curve in terms of people my age. I have more in common with a 30-year-old than with people in college. Unfortunately, I would feel weird spending time with 30-year-olds, and I'm sure they'd feel some weird about spending time with me. Most of my spare time is spent with family. They just seem to get me. How can I find people my age who think the way I do? I don't want to be the kind of girl who only spends time with her boyfriend. I would appreciate other relationships. Liz. Hey, Liz.
I'm not sure I understand the premise of the question.
Drink.
She wants social, outgoing, active friends.
Yeah.
Who don't drink.
I want to be with cool people that drink.
Who don't
I'm a cool person who doesn't drink. I need to find cool people that do.
Here's what I'm having a hard time figuring out. Like, is she not willing to hang out with people that drink at all?
That's what it seems like.
Is it a temptation or is it?
don't know. She just said she didn't do it. She didn't say why.
She's going to compromise?
Okay, here's the deal. She's a little lofty. She's got a little bit of a lofty attitude. I've always been ahead of the curve.
Right. Like by I don't 10 act years.
Like those I'm more in people. Common with 30-year-olds. Yeah.
You're saying she has an old
when
soul,
I was 10, I was hanging out with college people.
Yeah.
No, I think what she said, I think there's a little bit of judgment in there. I want to hang out with people that are lively, but not that are my age that dream.
You know, here's how you cover this. You show up, you hang around them for 2 hours before it gets all crazy, you hop on.
Man, when it gets crazy, that's the fun stuff. Like, that's when you and think to yourself, that she seems like a lofty.
I didn't suggest that snarky. That was your decision.
I did.
So some of it though is just it's a very different worldview and different lifestyle. I mean, it's just not interesting.
Well, but she's asking to be part of it.
She doesn't. No, she doesn't want to be a part of it. She wants people, but just aren't doing. If I'm understanding the question correctly,
yeah. She wants a higher level of.
She needs to find a church with people her age. That probably are full of people that are maybe in the same way.
I think she's like, is there a thing that I can go to that there's going to be people my age that are all hanging out and not drinking? Where's this building at and can I go make friends?
No.
There's no way to do that. You just need to go.
I'm sorry, is she asking the someone that she's never met find her friends? I'm not understanding.
That's what it seems. I'm 20 years old. I'm a little my age. I don't just want to hang out with my boy, but I don't want to hang out with the people my age that are out drinking. Go to find new friends is where what I'm
boys
getting at.
Go to the boys' camp.
Yeah, exactly. It's like go do yoga. I mean, I don't know. There's different places you meet people. Go jogging.
I have talked to other people who are in a similar situation. I mean, it is a frustration. Just not in there's like a party scene and a non-party scene. If you just want to have some friends and socialize, but you don't have to just go out and just party.
I do not think the world's even close to that black.
Right.
I'm not a drinker. Never have. Never struggled to find people.
Well, this is not a comparison.
We attract people. I'm just saying, like I there's this crazy party animals, and then you got the uptight guys.
They haven't
like,
looked in the right
there's
places.
There's a very broad in the world.
The greasers, squares. No, it's ridiculous. You're one of the socias, aren't you? No, it's ridiculous.
But it is like you go to a play job and everybody, hey, we're going out drinking tonight, and then pretty soon they realize you don't do that, so then you're just not part of the group.
That doesn't happen that way though.
They're okay. So my group of friends, I've got a good group of about 15 friends plus friends, really close, always have been. From a couple of them are hardcore drinkers that go out downtown 2-3 times a week.
Got it.
There's other people that refuse to go out, everything like that. And then there's people that don't go out to drink can never hang out with people that do. Like we,
that's not like the lushes and the blushes. Not
yeah, exactly.
Your options. Like there are people I hang out with when it's almost always they're going out to work and they're having a drink. I drink soda.
Exactly.
I probably stay for an hour and a half, and it's not like I don't have interaction, conversations. We don't. Mm-hmm. I go home to my family.
Yeah, if people are getting hammered at the barbecue. I'm going. I can't go and have ribs.
Yeah, it's that big of a.
Yeah,
it's not that fine line that would like you're either in or you're out. It's not that.
I don't think that there's a way to tell this gal. Well, this is. You meet people based off of the daily events that you have in your life.
Yeah,
I think that's how you feel
thing
it.
On her part. I agree with her. I'm saying that's perceived.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, you are not going to go somewhere. And just find friends there. You're not just going to go and find a bunch of friends that are tailored to your needs.
Yeah.
You're going to find people and relationships and connections based off of the things that you do. The activity, if you find yourself at the library, you're going to a different, bar or not a bar. You're going to a grill, whatever. All these different places, you're going to make connections there. That's where you get friendships from. It's not like you can just go buy them at the Costco. Friends section. It's like aisle 7 is like drinkers, 8 is non-drinkers. That's not how it works.
Mike looks befuddled.
I don't know anything about the fire. You lost something.
I remember the Panera.
He looks battle. Lost.
Yeah.
What? Friends? What?
I don't even know what you're saying. Here we go. That's why I'm advising you to join a gym or some other physical activity group and start meeting people
that's
who are...
That's all right. Whatever. If that becomes your day-to-day, what do you care how they get there? Yeah. Disappointment, beard man.
This is just no one place.
Okay, you're judging they're at, as if like I never changed behavior. I can only make friends if I never change my behavior.
I apologize. I was not trying to judge the place. It's not the gym that I'm laughing.
So go to the gym.
Yeah.
Okay, that works. Fine.
I've made friends at a gym.
I've made enemies at a gym.
That's cooler.
Go ahead, Mike.
No.
Okay. It's go to the gym.
Yep. Forget it. You guys have derailed this thing to the point of not being sad.
I thought.
Wait, the secular advice.
Yeah, I am. For heaven's sakes. There we go. Hold on. I got to find it again. People don't know who's full, man.
I know that.
Okay, here we go.
Back in.
Says join a gym or other physical activity group. Start meeting people who love physical activities. None of the ones I know want to spend their time drinking and partying because they are more interested in eating and living healthfully. I'm sure if you try it, you will meet others who think the same way you do.
What? You don't believe that, Boova?
I'm excited that that's secular's advice. Hope this gal is our comments.
Fitness.
Okay. All right, Boova, what's your Pope style?
Okay, so don't remember from the beginning of the show or weren't listening at that point in time. What the premise of the Pope style advice is some dude that doesn't like me at the local gym, he's hanging out with non-drinkers, decided that he was going to spite me. So there's about some people that have mistaken the Pope. They're on my front lawn, and now they're refusing to leave until I give them some nugget of wisdom. So here I am trying to walk my lawn. And this ties into prayer like we were talking about earlier. I found myself of really myself prayer. And I promise I'll explain. I'm an awesome person, and it's very difficult to humble me. I'm just things. At one point in time in my prayer life consisted of prayer. So I'm going to ask people for prayer all the time. That's what I'm going to do. Up and ask people about their prayer. I'm going to ask people to pray for me.
Uh-huh.
Step of, hey, by the way, you know, if we're going to pray, I'm going to throw in my, this is what you could pray for me for.
Uh-huh.
About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I realized how shallow that could be taken as. I'm not saying that everyone who does that is shallow. I'm saying that the way that I was doing it and the way that my heart was at the time was shallow. So I kind of, and I kind of switched up to where, if I was going to ask for prayer, first thing I was going to do is ask that person if they needed prayer first. So I wanted to ask them and give them a chance to tell me what they needed prayer for, ask them for prayer for me. It was to make it more of a mutual connection, to make it for more of a two-way street asking for it, but I was actively asking other people for thoughts on what I could pray for them.
Okay.
And at the time, I thought it was a very mature thing to do. I thought it was really derive more of a connection with people and more of a connection with God. And it went really well for a while. My honest intention was to figure out exactly what people needed prayer for because I wanted to connect with them. It was easy. It fitted me. Very recently, I realized that I'm kind of at the next stage, or I'm at the end of that stage because of the fact that it has turned from to build my prayer life of, you know, making sure that I was praying for other people, a checklist, to more of I'm asking people for their prayer so that I can get to the point where I can ask them for prayer for me.
Uh-huh.
It was no longer about the connection. It was no longer about really getting people's needs out and really figuring out, you know, what the whole thing is with them and things like that. And I kind of reached where I really need to humble myself again because I realized that my prayer life has really started boiling down to it for me. What am I getting out of it? It's not about my connection with God, and it's not about my connection with other believers and non-believers and trying to intercede in their life with my prayers to God and getting my prayers heard. Really boiled to, well, I've got things that I need. So I fake ask for people for prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I, if anyone hears this, and if anyone's, you know, recently heard this question from me, please don't feel like I can feel like I'm a jerk. Maybe I probably am. I promise you that we're worth it. But I've really kind of, I'm really trying to figure that out myself. But what I am trying to give advice to is life. It's easy to make yourself one benefit or the number one benefit of this. It's the easy to put yourself as number one in prayer, whereas you're not. You're not the sole person in prayer. Big reason for prayer. First off, it's you're praying to God for a reason. He's the person that's going to hear it. He's the person that gets these prayers and things like that. And if you're praying for other people so that you can get prayed for, you got to check yourself because I may be the only one that deals with it. If I'm not, I'm going to tell about it because I want to make our prayer life glorifying to God, and I feel like mine hasn't been. So if you're dealing with it, cautionary tale. Don't ever let your prayer life make you not. Don't ever let your prayer life make it about you getting things rather than you speaking to God first and foremost, and second off, speaking to God for other people and asking for his guidance and asking for his blessings and asking for his intercession on a lot of different things. So make sure that you're not number one in prayer would be my Pope style advice today.
We've actually been talking about that a lot with our youngest daughter. And what I, you know, the kids will pray. I, you know, pray with them every night and stuff. And then, you know, when I get older, I start kind of, then pray. We'll rotate a little bit. And for the most part, I try to resist the reaction to tell them how to pray. Like, I want them to talk to God as they would. So, like, some of the things they pray for.
Mom yeah. is in the world.
And I don't, and like, that's what's on their mind. And it, some of it's posturing because they're not quite sure what to talk about. And so some they don't have that many things that are like burdening people around them. They don't hear, they don't visit their friend in the hospital, you know. And so sometimes they'll like steal some of my and pray for that. But our youngest daughter has been she's on a kick where like it went on long enough and old enough where like I actually have tried to talk to her a little bit to understand her a little differently because pretty much every I hope that we have a good time. We have a good time. That we go to sleep and we wake up and then we have a good time and daddy have a good time tonight sleeping and tomorrow that he will have a good time. Amen. But sweetheart, that stuff, all those stuff's great. There's some other things that you could talk. Like, I don't want you to say that. Like, that's what's on her mind. I don't, right. I don't want to tell her how to have a relationship with God. Like we try to share some of the depth that's, like other things that you can talk to God about as opposed to just that focused thought. Because to a certain extent, I mean, I hear what you're saying. But, I mean, it's not wrong. It's certainly not wrong to petition God on for you.
Right.
You know, I mean, it depends what you're trying to do. You know, it's just, as a jukebox, that's a problem. But I mean,
if that's what I came off as, I apologize. I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't have a that's as a to you. That's not what I'm saying at all. Obviously, it's there for a reason. That is one of the reasons we can ask on petition for ourselves and, you know, asking God to interrupt. Right, exactly. The thing is to make sure that you're not the only person being benefited from prayers 100% of the time. You know, yes, you can yourself, and I'm not saying that every prayer should have something to someone else.
Yeah.
I'm just saying be humble in your prayer life also. Because realize that if the only thing you ever pray about is for you to get more money, the only thing you pray about is for you to get, you know, something else. I want a new house. What's going to happen? And you never take a stand on anything else. Maybe that's where you're at, but think about how else you can interact in prayer. Think about what are the things you're leaving out.
You need to grow to a relationship. You know,
right.
But, you know, if my children, every time they talk to me was about what they want next, at some point it was like, this is a relationship. This is just
you're the
things. But I want to have a relationship, you know, mm-hmm. I want to commune with them and talk back and forth and watch them grow up, be a part of their life. And that's, you know, what you're really reaching for.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the gimmick of, hey, I want to make it look like it's cool. Hey, can I pray for you? You know, and just relationship. And there are times you do have something. Hey, I got this issue. Would you go to my father before me? I'm praying about this, but would you join her with yeah. it too? You know, that's okay. That's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Pope John Booba.
I got nothing.
What? All right. Hey, you can listen to live. Yeah, make sure you check out the website. Go to livefrompat.org. Clips of past shows. For us, though, we have some big news on the horizon.
Really?
We do.
only for our benefit. Don't
on the horizon.
Pray for the Sudan.
Hope weeks. Love you. Have a good
week. Think of others.